Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for coming by tonight. I have several people lined up tonight. Some of them are already on my dashboard. We're going to talk tonight about a commentary that I was sent by Bryant Gumbel. Bryant Gumbel, who's years ago was on the Today Show, and now he does like a sports show all the time. I believe he's relatively respected, and I believe a lot of times he says things are that are controversial, albeit in relatively good taste, until this recent scenario. I am going to let you all hear this. I am going to put it on my computer and put the receiver next to this statement that he makes, and then we're going to talk about it because it literally blew me away. What he says, what he thinks, for me is like, first of all, archaic. So hang on, and then we're going to talk.
I'm Bryant Gumbel. If we assume that there are limits to what a civilized society should be willing to stage, watch, or accept in the name of sports and competition, what are they? Over the years, I've been prompted to ask that question by a variety of questionable events, each of which leave me wondering if we're not mining new depths. The latest item is a mixed martial arts fight scheduled for next month in Florida. It pits 28-year-old David Steffen against 23-year-old Garrett Holloff. Their talents aren't exceptional or noteworthy, but their disabilities are. You see, Steffen has cerebral palsy, and Holloff has Down syndrome. And while they're each to be applauded for their accomplishments, the same can't be said for those who are willing and eager to see them engage in a no-holds-barred fight in a cage for the supposed enjoyment of others. Mitch Holloff, Garrett's father, says he's proud of his son, and I'm sure he is. He wants to support a son who's determined to excel, and I get that too. But what I don't get is unnecessarily exposing a disabled person to an assortment of long-term risks that they may not even understand. I also don't get the mindset of those who will turn out to watch this spectacle or what the appeal is for them. Lastly, I don't get how the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation can claim to not be involved in the sanctioning of the bout when it's okayed by an independent body that it supposedly licenses. But then again, it is Florida. I don't get a lot of rulings coming out of Florida these days. I'm Bryant Gumbel.
No, thank you very much, Bryant Gumbel. I, first of all, am annoyed by his last statement quite a bit, as well as everything else he said. I'm going to open up the lines. I'm not sure whether I have Mitch, Garrett, or I have Barry with me. Hello, this is Renee. Hello, this is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Hello.
I don't know whether Mitch and Garrett were able to make it. They were trying their best, Renee.
Well, I have two other 954 numbers, but they have not asked me to bring them in. They're listening, though.
Okay. Well, all they have to do is, I believe,
okay.
Just hit
yep,
one.
2709746 has just told me that they want to come in. Hi, this is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart.
Hi, Renee. You got Mitch and Garrett here.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for joining us. I just played the commentary from Bryant Gumbel, and when I first got it, when Barry first sent it to me, I was like, appalled. First of all, it shows that he doesn't really understand the worth of doing things like this. But secondly, I don't know. I just found the whole commentary to be thoughtless, more than anything. Can you guys fill everybody in on what is taking place? And Garrett, if you're there, I applaud you, and I am totally proud of you.
Thank you. Per, as I said, I really don't care. I'm but I got it set. I don't care.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, and if I were you, I wouldn't care either.
Hi, Renee. This is Mitch. I'm Garrett's dad.
Hi, Mitch. It's a pleasure to meet you.
You too. Thanks for having us on tonight. You know, Garrett's kind of focused on his task at hand, which is his fight this weekend. It's not the first time that we've heard criticism, and I kind of enjoy my son's attitude because he doesn't care, and he's not going to let them get in his way. So I think that, you know, it makes us all laugh when he says it, but that's the right attitude that, you know, sometimes you can't argue with people. You just got to go out and show them what you can do.
Well, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. I for me, anybody who attempts to do anything, not everybody is, I don't know, the persona of perfection. I don't know anybody. I say this all the time on my show. If you know somebody who is perfect in every way, please bring them to me so that I can meet them, because I have yet to meet that person. What I do applaud is people's tenacity and their ability to move forward and do the things that they want to do, regardless of what the challenge is. That's awesome. And he should be, you all should be incredibly proud of him.
So I think for the most part, we've been fortunate, and we've gotten a lot of support, and especially a lot of support within the mixed martial arts community, and, you know, from others that practice, you know, for fun. They supported us because I think they understand what goes into the hard work of doing what she does. You know, I know Stuart Scott, who we've gotten to know a little bit from ESPN, has been very supportive, and he trains even while he's battling cancer. He's been training martial arts, and, you know, he's spoken out for Garrett, so I think that's important. And yeah, I think that we need to respect all. I think we need to respect everybody for their battles. It's not always the, you know, we glorify the winning every day, but what we really mm-hmm. should do is cheer everybody for the battle that they put up. And I think that's the important thing.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. And I also believe in my heart that you don't ever know what you're capable of doing until you try. I mean, my gosh. If people didn't try anything, where would we be? We'd still be in the dark ages. We'd still be swinging from the trees, for God's sakes. So this is, I think this is wonderful. Can you explain to everybody a little bit about the fighting and what is entailed? I mean, Bryant Gumbel makes it sound like the days of Spartacus, like they're, it's to the death and all this kind of stuff in a cage. And can you tell us a little bit about it?
This is not a position podcast, but it's not that. And everyone deserves a stand because, but they won't back out.
Yeah, it's, you know, that was one of the things that annoyed me and I thought was poor journalism is, He cast this with a brush of two guys in their backyard just beating each other up. And quite frankly, the rules that we're using for Saturday night are very limited rules. They're Florida amateur rules that are designed to protect new fighters in the arena. There's limitations to the types of strikes you can use and hitting to the head on the ground, and elbows and knees aren't allowed. So he really didn't have a clue to even the rules that we're using in this situation. And I think that just showed how clueless he was. So, you know, we're using Florida amateur rules that are designed to protect both fighters. There's not going to be any, if you know anything about martial arts, you know, it's a combination of wrestling, jiu-jitsu, and what we would call boxing and kickboxing. So you can utilize all those. In this case, if an opponent's on the ground, you're not allowed to strike to his face. There's no elbows. There's no knees. So it's really designed to protect the fighters. They wear shin guards.
Right.
So it's different than what you see even what he may see on UFC. These are quite different and modified rules to protect these guys. So I think that's a little bit different. than what he wants the people to understand. And there's plenty of rules here to protect the fighter. And in most amateur contests, you'll find that the referee, who's really in charge of both fighter safety, does a very good job. And I've been doing this for a while now, and most of the time my amateurs complain that they stop the fight too soon, but they don't understand the ref there to protect them. And we don't want anybody to get hurt. These guys aren't getting paid for this. They're doing it because they want to show off their talent. So I think that everybody involved goes out of their way to protect the guys, and we don't want them walking out of the cage hurt.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you describe to us what the cage is like? I've never been to one of these kind of fights, and I don't know how many of my listeners are aware of what actually takes place. Could you explain what that's like?
That is called an octagon.
It's an octagon?
Shaped like an octagon, and it's just chain link fence that's covered in mesh. It's in the shape of an octagon. There's a semi-padded floor that they fight on. One of the reasons in martial arts that we don't use, or we really try not to use, a boxing ring is it's actually an injury concern, because the ropes that you see in a boxing ring, if you lean against them, they give. And when you're wrestling, you can easily fall out of that. And quite frankly, what they found is that using the fence, or the cage is like people want to call it, but, you know, circling the fighters in the fence really adds to their safety. They can't fall out. They won't get tangled up in the ropes. You don't have to restart the fight every time somebody's head is sticking off the canvas. I've seen fighters in that situation actually fall off the canvas and get hurt. You know, the cage is also, because it's almost like a wall, it's very stiff, so you can't really bounce off of it that much. So that's the reason that the cage is really used. It's safer than using a boxing ring.
And what about bouncing against the cage? Because most of their body parts are protected, right? They have helmets on and stuff like that?
No, they're not wearing fighting helmets. Because they're wrestling...
No?
They're not wearing helmets. Because wrestling is involved in jiu-jitsu, the helmet really gets in the way. You can't execute some of your jiu-jitsu moves with the headgear on.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So that's one reason we don't use headgear. If it was just a kickboxing match, then they're limited to strikes at that point. I think that if people watch MMA, or if they're not familiar with it, depending on the fight, they could spend a majority of their time on the ground doing jiu-jitsu and wrestling and not really, you know, using much boxing. So the headgear is found just to get in the way. And a lot of times when they try to use it, it ends up getting pulled off and they have to stop the fight, and it ruins the continuity of what the guys are trying to do in the cage.
Mm-hmm. And their hands are bare as well, is that right?
No, they're wearing, actually, for the amateur fights, they wear 7-ounce gloves. Their fingertips are exposed. Their fingertips are exposed because they need to grip. You know, in order to do wrestling or jiu-jitsu, you need to be able to hold on to somebody.
Right.
So
yeah, that's why I thought their hands would be bare, yeah. Okay.
Right. So there is padding on the gloves. It's not bare knuckles. The padding in amateur is a little bit more in pros. The pros are using 4-ounce gloves. The amateur uses 7-ounce gloves. Just to give you an idea, a fighter will use usually 12-ounce gloves, and those gloves are bigger just because it covers the whole hand.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, and have you been hurt before, Garrett?
No, I'm not. But if I spar, I take shit.
But have you been hurt?
And I cut, and I healed.
Mm-hmm.
You've been hurt
mm-hmm.
once.
Once. Well, that's pretty good. And how many fights have you had?
I did 3, and this is my first fight.
Okay. Okay.
Is,
well, I mean, you know, in all honesty, I have grandchildren that play football and basketball. I've had two sprained ankles in the last week. Hospital runs for two sprained ankles. So, for me, I have four kids and 10 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren, and lots of them are boys. So I can't tell you how many times I've been to the emergency room for broken fingers from playing ball, sprained ankles, all of the above. So and one kid hurt himself a dozen times riding a skateboard. So, you know, for me it's kind of like, you know, this is different. And this is also teaching Garrett about control and precision and a million different things that he won't get any other way. I think it's awesome. I obviously, because I'm a mom, I would be a little bit worried about him because I don't want him to get hurt. But on the same token, that's how I worry about all the kids when they're out there playing basketball too. So one of the other things, yes.
I'd like to offer another viewpoint. You know, as parents and grandparents, we always worry about the activities of our children and grandchildren. But
yep.
Everything that we do has an element of risk. And while Mitch doesn't say anything, he played a lot of football in high school and college, and he had several injuries. But the discipline and the positive values that sports give back is to me, it is worth it.
Yep. I you know, as I said, I've got two boys right now playing football. And the one of them, who's 17, is the one who sprained his ankle playing basketball. So he said to me, you know, they have practice every night. And he said, well, Grandma, I'm not going to go. And I said, yes, you are. I said, half the reason I'm okay with you playing football is because it teaches you about being responsible, being someplace when you say you're going to be there, and taking care of business. If all you get to do is watch everybody else, then so be it. You're going to go. And he was like, okay, I get it. You're right.
So
all of these
again,
things are lessons.
Again, everything that we do has an element of danger, just walking down the street. And the activities that we all participate in certainly have other aspects of danger. But the reward is more often than not worth it. And the values that we get out of those activities certainly are worth it. As you said, the discipline, among other things.
That's right. I agree wholeheartedly. I think that anything also that boosts the morale, the self-esteem, the worthiness of a teenager today is important, because I talk to kids every day that don't have any of those, that struggle with who they are or who they aren't, struggle with who they want to be or who they can't be. It's a bit of an epidemic out there with young people. So I applaud what you're doing. I'm not sure that I would be always okay watching my grandchild get punched.
That's the hardest part about this. This training camp especially, you know, he's really gone at it, and his coaches have worked him hard. And I can tell you, as his dad, there's been plenty of nights where I go home and I'm trying to talk him out of it because it's not easy to watch. Yeah, so it's not, but, you know, this is what he desires to do, and I get yelled at every time I try to stop him, and, you know. And we've had some experiences in before with kids that weren't allowed to do this, and it really is negative. So I wasn't going to be an obstacle. Sometimes I have to walk away or yell at him to do something to protect himself. But, see, that's not the easy part. But the other thing, too, and just to go back to one of the things that Brian Gumbel said, too, in the interview, is that, you know, I really thought we were trying to move away from the age of label. And when he labeled Garrett, you know, with the label Down syndrome, and and disabled, that was really offensive because he doesn't know my son. And mm-hmm. besides what he's able to do athletically in the cage and what he's been able to achieve, he doesn't know that he spends 2 hours a week teaching other kids with special needs martial arts, and that he's gone out to schools and talked to kids with special needs and have told these kids that they can achieve their dreams. And that's the part that really kind of, for me personally, hurt. You know, I can glorify mm-hmm. my kid getting a home run or scoring a touchdown. That's great, but it doesn't always make him a good person. And through the last 4 years, as Garrett's done his martial arts and has learned in respect and given back, he's decided that this is something that he wanted to do and, you know, really help others and get involved with the other kids that may have special needs and show them the way, you know, that things can be done and they can achieve everything.
So you give back.
That's right. That's right. Well, and I agree with all that, and I also agree with the fact that when somebody else who is a peer to other young people is able to overcome any kind of obstacle, I don't care whether it's just not being real graceful, you know, and you want to play a sport, and you get out there and you do it anyway, and with sheer determination, you become pretty good at it. You teach other people that are watching you that they're capable of doing the same thing. So in that respect, I imagine he's changed a lot of young people's minds.
I have a sword, a baseball, my dad, and then with his dad, beating by my coach. And
right.
He was
well,
the only reason I love sports.
And how old were you, Garrett, when you started really enjoying 19. This particular sport?
19. I was 19.
Did you play any other sports or get involved in any other kind of sports before you started doing this?
I did basketball. And I did about 3 years back, I did golf.
That's right.
That's another one, and that teaches you some grace, playing golf.
He played, it's funny too, because I remember back when he wanted to play golf and we took him to the golf instructor and they were all laughing at, you know, giving us the same attitude that they weren't quite sure why he was even there. And, you know, soon enough he learned how to hit a golf ball. Pretty good too, right?
But playing outdoors, the eyes, I do mix martial arts. Because for all my coaches, we respect me as a coach, but as a fighter, because I teach kids, like with new kids, but I teach down kicking kids.
And how old are some of the kids that you're helping?
I've been 16 kids, and I see like eight or nine.
Really?
Kids.
Yeah, we have a class. We had eight students, and they range from 8 years old to actually the same age as she is, 23. They had autism, Down syndrome, different issues that you're dealing with. You know, one of the great things is that one of the moms told us that her son used to use a wheelchair to get around, even though he didn't need one. He had nothing wrong with his legs, and he participated in her class fine. And she told me that he always used to use a wheelchair to get around the mall whenever they went anywhere, Disney World, and he was always afraid. And the wheelchair was really his safety zone. And recently,
right.
They went to the zoo. and he walked the entire zoo by himself out in front of his entire family, like he was the leader of the pack. And, you know, that's amazing to see. And the kids just, you know, through just training and saying, hey, look, I can do this, I can do that, he's become more confident. He's never going to fight, and I don't want him to fight, but I think the sports training and the martial arts training showed him that he's capable and that he shouldn't be afraid of things. And you know, that's where G started. He's just been able to take it to another level.
I'm some defense itself. There's a pick on next being bullied, and demonstrated on my defense themselves.
Mhm. Well, I think by you setting the example, that makes the other kids feel like, you know, that they have more of a chance, and they don't just walk away because they think that they can't do it. So when you stand up there and explain to them, you know, that you weren't sure you could do it either, but you are, I think that says a lot to a young person. I think that they learn a lot that way. I think it's wonderful that you're teaching other kids. I spent some time working with some autistic children with ponies, and I found it to be rather challenging. So I think it's wonderful that you're doing something like this, and I think that these kids you've changed their lives. I'm sure, Garrett. I'm sure that you've made their lives better by what you're doing.
Thank you.
You know, the other thing Gumbel doesn't talk about is the fact that the Special Olympics are applauded by everyone.
Well,
you know, I mean,
only,
and
yeah, not only that, and recently the head of the Special Olympics, just a couple of weeks ago, because she was asked to comment on Garrett and what he's trying to do, and you know, and I realize the Special Olympics, for their reasons, don't want to have martial arts in their program, but she was very supportive of what he's doing and felt, you know, as though that everybody should be given the opportunity. And you're right, you know, a few years ago, we never thought we would have had the Paralympics. And, you know, and as more of our soldiers come back with, you know, their issues, we see more and more of them getting involved in sports and what it's doing and for their lives, too. So, you know, it's just important for people to have that opportunity, to have that outlet to compete and to do things that everybody wants to do in everyday life, no matter what level they're doing it on.
That's right. And you know, one of the things that I talk about on this show, because I started out mostly talking about bullying because of what happened to my grandson and what had happened to my other kids in life's journey. But as I started talking about so many different topics, I realized that at the end of the day, it often melts down to some sort of bullying, either because there's something different about you. I don't care what it is. But I also realized that if people's minds aren't open and their arms aren't open to the changes that are going to come to them, then, you know, they never move off the space that they're in. So I hope that when Garrett fights this week, that a lot of people are there and a lot of people talk about it. Do you have a lot of media?
I do. But now I get I got this
interview,
and I had this sponsored from.
Excuse me.
I heard of it. Your grandpa told me about that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a fair amount of media. Up really, quite frankly, until Brian Gumbel decided to stand up, it was not that much, which is really the way we want it to be. We don't want it to be anything special. It would be nice if we get no attention. But within the martial arts community, you know, we've gotten some media. You know, Garrett had an ESPN piece about him back in March, which is a spectacular piece that they did. So we're at this point, I think we're kind of hoping that he doesn't draw as much attention because it's so special. And I also have a feeling that after, and we should mention his opponent, David, has cerebral palsy. So I think that after the fight and as people see it online and after it's done and they're successful, that I have a feeling that we'll get even more, he'll get more exposure for what he's doing at that point once he proves everybody wrong. You know, the naysayers won't be out there or they'll try to come back at him. But I don't think he's really doing it for the media attention, are you, G?
Kind of exactly as you, but Otto Blank, Gumbo gets fired.
That's happened to him before, yeah. G. That has happened to him before. He has been fired before.
But what's going to be happening now?
Well, I think that his mind is very small, and, you know, you pay for having a small mind, no matter who you are, and yours isn't, and you are really, really a wonderful, wonderful example of what we are capable
Thank
of doing.
You.
Mm-hmm. You're very, very welcome.
Rini, I don't mean to cut it short, but he's got to go back and train. This is his last night. If anybody's interested, before we go, if you go to www.garrettsfight.org.
Right, I've been announcing that on the radio show, and I will put it on my Facebook page as well, so that anybody who listened to the show tonight can talk or can check it out and see what they think. And this weekend for me is insane because we've got a bunch of surgeries going on in the family. I had wanted to try to be there to watch Garrett fight, but the next time he fights, I promise I will be there.
Well, hopefully next time we won't have to. I appreciate your support very much.
I just want to thank you, and I want to thank my coaches. They really helped me out, for a long time, and I know them a pretty long time.
Yes. Well, I think you're very lucky to have your dad and your grandpa. They're your big supporters, and I think the three of you are doing a wonderful job for a lot more people than you have any idea are going to be touched by all of this. So good luck in your training.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Rini.
You're welcome, Mary. Thank you. Everybody be well. Okay, folks. I would like to carry on this show in the flavor that we are already addressing, and that is by some information that I pulled in tonight about the Special Olympics. Most of you know that the Special Olympics were organized by Eunice Kennedy Shriver, and she started them in her own backyard in 1960. And in 1968, she organized the very first International Special Olympic Games at Soldiers Field. And the paperwork that I found on it and the reports is really wonderful. But their mission statement reads like this: and if this doesn't make you understand why things like this are important, then you should be sitting with Bryant Gumbel. The mission of Special Olympics Florida is to provide year-round sports training and competition in a variety of Olympic-type sports for people with intellectual disabilities who wish to participate, giving them continuing opportunities to develop physical fitness, demonstrate courage, experience joy, and participate in the sharing of gifts, skills, and friendship with their families, other Special Olympic athletes, and the community. The ultimate objective of Special Olympics Florida is to help people with intellectual disabilities participate as productive, and respected members of society at large by offering them a fair opportunity to develop and demonstrate their skills and talents through sports, training, and competition, and by increasing the public's awareness of their capabilities and needs. And like I said, in the early 60s, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, she started all of this in Chicago. And today, the Special Olympics is the world's largest provider of fitness training, education, and athletic competition, coupled with social, life, and leadership skill development opportunities for children and adults with intellectual disabilities or a similar developmental disability. Special Olympics Florida, an accredited program of Special Olympics Incorporated, was founded in 1972 and is one of the largest volunteer-driven athletic organizations in the state. Now, that's pretty awesome. Special Olympics is a worldwide movement where one can act locally but make a global impact. In 2012, with over 53,000 competitions around the world, with training taking place every day with family leaders, athletic leaders, volunteers, extending our message every day, Special Olympics is no longer just an event. They are a movement inviting the world not just to attend games, but to think, feel, and act differently about everything. Come help create a world of acceptance and inclusion for all. Gosh, you guys, this is everything we talk about. This is everything we're trying to make be more commonplace. This is everything that we feel we need to do for all of us. Because let's remember, special needs are two very simple words, and they could mean anything. Special can mean anything from unique and beautiful to strange and fearful. Special means different in a lot of scenarios. And I'm sorry, but we are all, in our own way, special and unique, every one of us. The Special Olympics in Florida currently operates year-round programs in 49 of Florida's 67 counties. There are over 250 training sessions and competitions offered annually for athletes, coaches, and volunteers. They have open spots in their programs, but for the people who are running the leadership programs. Everyone can participate in this in one way or another. They've improved the quality of life. Once ignored, neglected, hidden at home, or isolated from the community in institutions, now, this is true. We all know this to be true. People with intellectual disability have gained respect and acceptance through Special Olympics. To every athlete involved, the program provides a lifetime of active participation in sports and an opportunity to become contributing and accepted members of society. To their families, it is a symbol of hope. To volunteers and to the public, Special Olympics offers an experience that uplifts the spirit and touches the heart. A person's participation in Special Olympics has been scientifically proven to have a variety of beneficial outcomes, including improved self-esteem and overall health, better relationships with family members, and a greater ability to become productive members of the community. In 1993 and 1994, the Yale University Child Study Center conducted a survey of athletes to measure the effects of their participation in Special Olympics. Using a control group, individuals with similar disabilities and of similar socioeconomic stature, Dr. Dickens found that Special Olympic athletes outperformed the control group in the following ways. They got along better with communities and school. They achieved more personal goals. They had higher levels of self-esteem, higher levels of success, demonstrated improvement in behavior, habits, and life skills, and derived considerable intrinsic pleasure from solving difficult problems. Geez, I wish we could get that across to everyone. I guess the point here, this is if you ever have a mind to check out the Special Olympics, if you're the kind of person who's looking to do something that would be beneficial, as I say, they have need for volunteers. And I would imagine that it would be very fulfilling. This is a note from the families that are involved. Over and over, parents tell of the isolation they felt upon learning that their child had an intellectual disability. Then they explain how Special Olympics of Florida delivered hope, a place to belong, and a sense of community. In Special Olympics, family members gain support network of people with similar concerns, questions, and life experiences. Help finding medical expertise and community resources, a place of acceptance, respect, and belonging. Through their participation in Special Olympics, athletes form better and stronger core relationships, and parents and siblings see firsthand the unique talents and skills of the people they love so much. It's a win-win. It's a win-win. And all of this with Garrett. Now, I want to tell everybody, I met Garrett's grandfather. I've had Garrett's grandfather on the show before to teach and to answer questions about Medicare. He's a charming man who absolutely lights up when he talks about his grandson. Is it because he's such a great fighter? I don't think so, although he's proud of that. Is it because he's training so hard and working so hard to be successful at this endeavor? Maybe a little bit, but that's not the whole story. It's because he is overcoming all of the personifications of somebody who has Down syndrome. He is overcoming what everybody wrote on paper that somebody with Down syndrome was supposed to be. And he isn't. He isn't anymore. He's moved past what all of the powers that be wrote in a book or on a sheet of paper. This is what happens when you're born with Down's syndrome. And it's no longer true for this young man. You heard him yourself. And he's proud of what he's doing. And his parents are not just proud of what he's doing. They still have the same fears. You heard us talk about that. You heard Mitch say sometimes he has to tell Garrett to take it easy or don't do this or don't do that. Garrett's 23 years old. Now, I don't know about you, but I got kids that are 45 years old. And I still talk to them every now and then like they were 17, and they just look at me with that look. And I imagine that's what Garrett does to his dad. He's in charge. And I imagine many years ago when he was diagnosed, they weren't ever thinking of him being in charge. And now he is. Why? Because he realized he could be. He didn't listen to what everybody told him he was supposed to be. He didn't pay attention to how everybody told him he couldn't do this or he shouldn't do this or he can't do that, he won't be able to do this. He overcame all those things, which tells you, at the end of the day, most of us, if we really want to do something bad enough, we can. And I, for one, am really, really proud of this young man, and I meant what I said. I will, at some point in time, take some family members, probably my three younger grandsons who are into boxing and all kinds of sports, and let them let them watch Garrett and maybe learn a little something from him. I want to read a little bit about the impact that Special Olympics has had here in Florida. According to Gallup polls, 96% of respondents believe that persons with intellectual disabilities benefit from Special Olympics. Well, I think that's a given. Special Olympics enhances social competence and adaptive skills, building positive self-perception and improved work performance while encouraging independence and offering real physical benefits, according to a Yale University study. Special Olympics was named the most credible charity in America. Well, that's pretty special as well. It's recognized by 98.5% of the respondents in a Gallup poll. A Gallup poll found that consumers were significantly more likely to purchase products associated with Special Olympics when compared with other major sporting events. Special Olympics, 56%, the regular Olympics, 38%, the World Cup, 25%, and the Super Bowl, 23%. Who would have thought that? I thought the Super Bowl would win everything. Special Olympics was the top charity among Time magazine subscribers and the most favorite charity in a CityCorps survey. So I guess the point I was trying to make by reading some of these facts from the paperwork that I pulled up today was the fact that somebody who is supposed to be open-minded and research a little bit on what he talked about actually did Garrett a favor, because he brought everything to the forefront, and now people will understand what's going on instead of being so judgmental, and appreciate the fact that this young man has overcome many, many obstacles to get where he is, and should be revered and should be appreciated for the fact that he was able and capable to do those things. I think it's a great thing. I think it's a wonderful thing. I also wanted to talk a little bit tonight about a couple other things, but I please, if you can, and if you can get to on my Facebook page, I will write down Garrett's site so that you can check it out. I will put it on my Facebook page tonight so that everybody can talk about his website and check it out and see a little bit more about this this young man. I'm trying to see if I have it right here. It's garrettsfight.org, but I will post it and make sure that you can all see it on my Facebook page. If you are a listener and listen to me all the time, you are welcome to friend me. Just tell me you are a follower of the Renee's Heart to Heart, and I will accept you as a friend. I also have a website, but it's still not totally together. But as soon as it is, I will let everybody know where that is. And I've started some blogging too, so that people know what's going on with what I have happening on the radio show. But I have a few more minutes left, and I wanted to put something very personal out there. I retired a couple years ago from Hippocrates Health Institute, and I really thought I was going to do other things and maybe not go right back to work. I have tried to, spread some words of encouragement and help people in various ways. I help the food bank, and I volunteer at hospice, and I actually tried to do a 501c3 and start a place to help kids that are kind of in transient positions where they can't go home and they can't be put in a foster home, or maybe they can go home, but sometimes home isn't as desirable as they'd like it to be. And I was going to call it Grandma's House, and they could come by and there'd be a washer and dryer, maybe some hot soup on the stove, a bed if they needed for a little while. It wouldn't be a place for kids to stay all the time, but I really felt it was something that was needed. However, the red tape and the bureaucracy was more than I could handle and manage, and money became a major issue. So I decided to do the radio show in the hopes of helping people understand that it's important that we all understand each other. And I intend to keep doing my radio show. I get a lot of good feedback, and I've developed quite a few listeners. And I think it's nice to know that if you're having a bad time, you can listen to us talk about the woes of many and some of the suggestions that we come up with to help people get to a better place. But in the interim, I guess I want to go back to work. And if any of you out there are looking for somebody, I've been a general manager. I've worked at many hotels. Most recently, for 10 years, I was the general manager at Hippocrates Health Institute. And I loved it because I love people. I'm very people-oriented, and I'm very service conscious. I am aware of the fact that when you say you're going to do something for somebody, it's important that you do it. And it's important that you do it the way you said you're going to do it. And it's also important to have a sense of urgency when somebody is waiting for something. For many, many years, I worked in restaurants and bars. I owned my own bar and restaurant when we were young. And I have been a food and beverage manager in hotels, general manager in hotels. I've been the executive housekeeper, the director of housekeeping. I have years of experience in the service industry with people. I have no real desire to get back into restaurant business because it's a very hands-on. And when I was young, I loved it because I met all kinds of people, made all kinds of friends, and it was always wonderful for me. But a hotel scenario in some capacity would be great, or even a place that, that helps people with any kind of dependencies or anything like that. I do not have any kind of credentials. I am an ordained minister, and I am very, very life smart. I have been through a lot in my life, survived everything, and as I said, I love people. So if anybody out there knows of a place that could use somebody with my talents, I would be more than happy to meet with somebody or send a resume or anything along those lines. So on that note, however, I would like to say that I won't need to be off for the whole week next week. I will be off for a couple nights. On the 5th and the 6th, I probably will need to be in the hospital with my husband in Boca Raton while he has his surgery, but the outlook for that looks pretty good, and I believe that I should be back to normal and back to a semblance of schedule by the second day with him. The prognosis is pretty good, and they're not telling us that he has to be in the hospital for a long time. However, my son, Michael, who surgery has been rescheduled because of some turns that we weren't expecting and aren't really for the best, but everybody is rallying, and they're going to do a double surgery on him, on the front of his neck for his trachea and on the back of his neck for his cervical spine. But that's not going to take place until the 13th of August. So I will be on the air on the 12th, and then probably not for the rest of that week. The 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, I will be off the air. So I will repeat that several times until that time comes. My son will be in the hospital in Miami. and that will mean running back and forth and, if necessary, staying down there with my daughter-in-law. So I wanted everybody to know that because I don't like to just not be here when you expect me to be here. So I will be off the air next Monday and next Tuesday and then back on for the rest of that week and then up until the 12th, which is a Monday, and then the 13th through the 16th I will be off the air. So, but I'll keep everybody posted and everybody will know what's going on. So I want to thank you for joining me tonight. And it's a little bit early, but there's no callers. And I guess I've told you everything I need to tonight. So I want to say thank you and God bless you all. And thanks for tuning in. And I hope you'll check out Garrett's website. And I hope this young man makes you feel as positive and as uplifted as he does me. I really applaud people who can overcome obstacles. So for tonight, I want to say good night. And from my heart to yours, God bless. And I'll be here tomorrow night. Bye-bye.